Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast about Deep Space Nine by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast at all. I'm Adam Franica.
I'm Ben Harrison. We're still looking at each other during, and it's still weird.
It really got me off script for the opener.
Yeah.
People aren't going to like that.
Yeah, that's not the product we're selling, Adam.
How dare you gently change the thing that I've grown used to over the course of 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, if you're waking up in the morning on a Monday and you're expecting one thing and you get very slightly the other thing...
The only thing you can do is tweet or Facebook or Reddit at us about how disappointed you are in every decision we've ever made.
I mean, in the defense of that way of thinking, I can't think of many good decisions we have made. So
no, that's true. I guess the only reaction I have to such a criticism is, I know, okay?
We just took a walk with my dog around the lake.
Judith B. Raskin Lake.
Was it fun for you to put a place to the thing I have described at you so many times?
Oh, it's not my first time circumnavigating the Raskin.
Yeah.
It's one of the great places to walk around. I love it.
Fun to see the dog take a lunge at a goose. Fun to see some
And to see that goose not flinch at all.
Yeah.
Like, and actually give your dog a come at me, bro kind of look.
Yeah.
Like a Bob Seger album cover. The goose is like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, the goose is practicing in front of the mirror with its drawer slider gun ejection device up its sleeve.
Yeah.
You looking at me? There's nobody else here, so you must be looking at me.
Free plug for that burger bar down there.
Oh, yeah.
At Echo Park Lake. That place is great.
Yeah, they do a real nice burger. I might even say that the chicken sandwich is slightly better than the burger.
I noticed when I asked your advice on what to order, you didn't say that.
Was the burger a misfire, Adam?
No, the burger's great.
Yeah, okay.
I came into this conversation pro-burger.
Yeah. Maybe it was the right thing for you.
It was. I feel great. Sometimes you have a burger and it like ruins your day. Mm-hmm. You ever have that kind of burger?
Yeah.
This is not that burger.
No.
I was able to walk back to your place from Echo Park.
Yeah.
From Echo Park Lake, so that's encouraging.
There's some talk of eating some Korean barbecue later, and I just thought maybe all of that beef consecutively was not where I wanted to be.
What I wanted to do was lay down a covering fire of ground beef to soften up my digestive system for the beef to come later.
Right. You've been bombing your system with beef for 62 days.
Expend all beef ordnance on my position. It's a lovely fucking barbecue. It's great to be here. Like, for as much fun as we make of looking at each other during, it is a great in-person hang anytime we can do this.
Yeah, we just got to figure out more ways to do it. I mean, I think that it's been amazing to have the support of our listeners so that we can do things like touring. And we're like, that has not satiated us, I don't think. Like, we want to do touring and even more in-person stuff.
Right.
So, I don't know. We'll figure something out.
Yeah. Our judgment has been all right up until now. Which is encouraging.
Yeah.
No pending lawsuits yet.
Right.
That we know about.
We're getting ready to go to the Star Trek Las Vegas convention.
Get a life!
We will be broadcasting our pirate signal to a room full of people while the con is going on.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I think that'll be cool. I mean, it was always an experiment. We'll, like, we'll see how that goes, because we were like, well, probably our people are interested in going to the Vegas Star Trek con, but also, are they not?
Right. I think the way that playing a Vegas show works is so different from any other tour date that we have.
Yeah.
And the way ticket sales operate there, like, it's just not as predictable as any other show we've done. So I don't know if I'll be surprised if not many people are there or if it is packed.
Part of the difficulty of programming it was like, okay, like, we know, like, roughly the dates of the convention, and we know that we want to, like, be there and enjoy the convention,
mm-hmm.
but does the convention have so much programming that getting away for one of those evenings is, like, not appealing to somebody who might be interested in both things?
Yeah, I just don't know. Like, you go in there thinking, yes, like, we got a Friday night in Vegas. That's going to be kick-ass, and yeah. I expect it to be. But, like, it's a place without a recognizable 24-hour clock. Like,
right.
Does that mean anything there? And yeah. Does it mean anything?
Oh, is it Friday night? Oh, shit.
Yeah, like, does it mean anything during the con? This is an event that we've never been to before.
Yeah.
So
really kind of the height of hubris to book ourselves a show.
I think it's great. I think, you know, it's like a Rocky movie, right? Like, you want to see if you can hang in the ring with the champs.
With Apollo Creed.
Yeah, and this is like, this is not in the ring. This is the parking lot.
Yeah, this is down the street from the ring in a different building.
Yeah. Yeah, but like that story, I think ours is an underdog tale.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that we can go the distance and make this thing work.
Yeah, Rocky's goal was not to win. It was just to, like, stay in the fight for a while, right?
Yeah.
It was, like, to beat the split or whatever. What was the...
He wanted to go the distance, and he lost
the
split decision.
Right, yeah. Good for you, Rocky. You lost, but in a way, you did win.
We will succumb to heavy brain trauma for totally different reasons by the end of our Vegas visit.
Alcohol-based brain trauma, but also probably just, like, Klingon cosplayers bonking us on the head with their fiberglass batleths.
Yeah, you hope that's rubberized loaf you're getting headbutted with, but what my theory presupposes is maybe it's, like, just hard paper mache.
Well, Adam, speaking of Klingons rampaging, do you want to get into the episode we watched today?
I think we have an obligation to, an oath even, if you will.
Oh, shit.
As we talk about Deep Space Nine Season 2, Episode 19, Blood Oath.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
So, we start in Quark's bar, and Quark is kind of turning in a Klingon customer for hogging the dual-screen X-Men side-scroller.
God, so great.
Just won't get off it, won't let anybody else play.
That game is so much fun.
Yeah, that's one of the great games. I guess it's not really a game you can hog, though. That was a bad analogy.
Who is your guy in that game?
Cyclops.
Me too. Me too.
We couldn't play together.
I know.
One of us would have to be one of the other dumber X-Men.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Wolverine is popular, but I just never saw the appeal.
I was never a Wolverine guy.
Yeah.
I think he was too cool to ever select.
I have found that a lot of people come down on the Wolverine and the Raphael, but I was always a Raphael fan with the Turtles, but then a Cyclops fan with the X-Men. What were you with the Ninja Turtles? Or was that did you not pick a fave?
I was Don.
Oh, you were a Donnie man.
I liked the reach of the bow staff a lot.
Yeah. Plus he does machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was useful. How did you feel when the Marvel Universe was spooling out X-Men films? how they made Cyclops as a character, and specifically like as a hateable piece of shit character.
I didn't love it. That guy kind of suffered from something we've talked a lot about with regard to LeVar Burton, where the eyes being covered up really kind of turns the character into kind of a one-dimensional thing. And I think that it was kind of a hateable character that didn't have any way for us to empathize with them.
It was pretty thankless.
Yeah.
That actor is James Marsden, who is in another one of your favorite shows, Westworld.
Yeah. I love that show so much I started a podcast about it.
I know.
Every episode is the same. And it's actually just one episode, but it is my review of every episode of Westworld. Even season two.
You haven't invited me to be a guest on that show. I guess it's just, I think it's smart as a podcast producer.
I just want to, you know, I want to like,
you don't
want to
dilute me.
I want a little side project, a little sandbox where I can kind of play with my own creativity. Yeah. But like, I think
I can respect that
where LeVar Burton really shines on TNG, despite not seeing his eyes. I think that James Marsden did not overcome the fact that we didn't see his eyes in that Cyclops role.
Another difference between the two roles is that James Marsden fucks.
Bullshit, man. It's just bullshit.
I agree with LeVar Burton about that. So Odo, not really caring if Quark lives or dies, has Quark shut off the power to the arcade game and the doors on the Holo Suite open. And out comes a very inebriated Klingon.
You dare interrupt the battle of Clark de Kelblad?
Who is quite keen to kill Quark, but Odo kind of stands in between them.
Odo twice in this episode displays some hostage negotiator style talkdowns of of Klingons at a few different times. Like, he is very deft at judoing someone's anger and like using their emotions to sort of like calm them down. Like, the thing he does to Kor here is like,
battle is over, the people are waiting to celebrate your victory.
Redirecting his energy instead of trying to stop it is a thing that people can learn to do at parties.
Yeah.
Like, when things start to get out of hand, like, you never try to, as you said, like, stop a guy from throwing a concrete block through a windshield. Like, you get him to throw it in the street or something. Hey, you can still throw it.
See how much fun it is if you throw it at some pavement.
Yeah, how about the lawn?
I also detected some kind of, like, professional respect that Odo has for Klingons. Like, when it is revealed that this dude is a Dahar master, Odo is like, oh. Like, he kind of cleans up a bit.
Game respect game.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, like, a couple of times they do things that cause Odo to roll his eyes.
You know he could roll his eyes, like, in a disgusting way, I bet, right?
Yeah, he could do, like, the...
he could owl roll
the
them.
The cha-ching.
Like,
they come up as dollar signs.
He should do more fun shit like that.
Yeah, if the Ferengis had found him, I think he would, you know?
He'd be in a Ferengi circus, poor guy.
Such a shame. Like, what would be the funnest race for Odo to have been found by? Like what if the Andorians had found him and he was, like, trying to be blue and antennae, but he was a little goopy about it still?
I mean, I'd like to see what his ears looked like if he tried to make Ferengi ears.
Yeah, just big flat circles.
Yeah.
There's a couple of Klingons here on the station. There's this guy, Kor. There's also Koloth, who comes and visits Odo in the security office and does so in a way where it's kind of like a samurai movie trope where Odo, like, is looking at his pad and he looks up and there's just a guy standing in front of him. And he asks him to explain how he got there. And there's a fun, like, you know, my name is why and how I got here. That should be enough to satisfy you.
Koloth clearly, like, left his temple walking out on the rice paper without tearing it.
Totally. Yeah, and so it kind of gets around that a bunch of Klingons are aboard the station. This is a conversation that Odo and Kira have in the in the ops section, and we get like a nice pan over to Dax, where you know she's clearly just kind of overhearing.
Did you say core?
Something else happening in the office, and it makes her realize something may be afoot. This causes Dax to like grab Odo by the sleeve and take him back down to the security office, where she basically takes responsibility for the still very drunk core.
Yeah.
He doesn't recognize her because when he met her, she was a he. And three different times in this episode, she has to explain to a Klingon who she is and who she was and prove it in three different ways.
Which you have to assume she had done already as Curzon the first time.
Yeah, like these guys all act like this is news to them.
They have a baby's amount of understanding of, like, whatever the person version of object permanence is. Like, whenever she leaves a room, they're like, where did she go?
She must be dead.
Yeah.
I hope she died honorably.
Like, they clearly spent a ton of time together. I am positive this was explained fairly often.
Yeah. What's up with those spots on your face? Oh, well, let me explain.
Curzon's like... They're all like comparing scars at the bar, and he's like, Curzon's like,
a load of
check
this
out. Like, points to her kangaroo pouch.
Zip. You know, they meet up with Koloth, the older of the two that we've met so far. These guys have been kind of, it's been kind of arranged that they are here, and they suspect that they are on Deep Space Nine because the third of their little band of misfits is like engineering a situation whereby they can pick up Dax to go on some kind of quest.
I wish we saw their Klingon ship docked at the station, though. We never see the two things together. We only see the Klingon ship later in transit.
Yeah, I wonder if that's just because it's the classic movie model of a Klingon ship, and yeah, maybe it was built to a different scale or something.
Yeah, I bet.
It would have been really cool, yeah.
Or maybe they just can't get their rings to fit together.
Well, they're working on fitting it with a universal docking ring, so right, I could meet up with British, German, just about anybody.
There is a word that gets used throughout the episode that really clangs. Not to use a possible name for a Klingon warrior, but that word is godfather.
Like, yeah.
I understand why that word is used so that a viewer can understand that, but like, we know what a chadich is because of its repeated use in TNG. Like, why not give it a Klingon name and then define it and then make that an understood thing? Like, I don't like Klingons using and accepting like human normative terms for things like this.
Yeah, it's like French people using the word email. No, it's courrier électronique.
That was going to be my example.
Yeah,
you left me nowhere to go conversationally, Ben.
Yeah, I saw you reaching for it. I'm sorry. I had to jump all over it.
Did that bother you at all, or is it just me?
No, I was bothered by it. Like that and the thing of Dax having to re-explain that she's a Trill and that she's still Dax, but she's no longer Curzon.
Right.
Is really bad writing and not equal to some of the other really fun stuff in this episode. And there's a lot of fun stuff in this episode. Like, the camera like pans over while they're having this conversation, and Kang, the third of these old Klingon dudes, walks out of an airlock and says,
"I have found the albino."
I feel like one thing that we should do before we get too far is do takes of Kang, Kor, and Koloth, just to have them, because their names phonetically sound so interchangeable. I know we're gonna fuck this up.
Yeah. Don't write in if we fuck it up. These are characters, I guess, from TOS.
they are the same people.
They came in and they were like, wait, you're going to put us in what? I mean, back in the day, we just did blackface. Why are we being put on all this loaf?
They're like, blackface is not cool anymore.
They're like, it's kind of blackface, but there's loaf, so it's okay. Yeah, like, what the hell was going on? Like, how in the 90s was everybody like, it's okay to put a white actor in very dark makeup if you have loaf, but if no loaf, not okay. Like, that's literally the distinction that they're making.
Yeah,
it's fucked up. Koloth is not that, is not, like, I think his complexion is actually probably pretty close to his loaf complexion, but Kor and Kang,
The loaf can forgive a lot of problems, I guess. I guess that's what we've learned.
The loaf forgives all.
Yeah. Yeah, but God, the expectations that they had going into this had to have been blown away by the time they reached hour five in the makeup chair.
Yeah. Like, if you're an actor and you, like, yeah, oh, I remember having done Star Trek. Yeah, that rings a bell. They want me to come back in? I don't know if it's a good idea, because if I recall correctly, they put me in blackface, and I just don't think that's going to play to a 1996 audience.
My grandkids hate me. My Thanksgivings have sucked for 20 years.
And guess what? They're not wrong.
My daughter's boyfriend asked me what I did when I was younger, and I said I was an actor. He looked me up, and now he hates me. This scene leads into another scene in Ops where Kira and Dax start discussing
body
death.
Counts.
Yeah.
They're like going over like some plasma discharge that they're trying to lock down, and just like 0 to 60, Dax is like, hey, Kira.
How many people did you kill?
And Kira is like,
what?
We've been told that they are very good friends, like the best of friends.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised that this is not a subject that they've ever discussed before.
It's either that they've never discussed it or they've kind of agreed not to.
And it has to be that one.
Yeah. Or, I mean, like, I don't know. Is it something you would talk to somebody about? I don't know anybody that I think may have killed anybody, so I don't... But, if I met somebody that I thought might have... Like, if I met somebody and I knew them to have been a former member of SEAL Team 6...
Sure.
I don't know if even after six beers I'd be like, so, what are we talking about here?
I mean, the one thing that Dax has to have known is Kira's not all the way great feelings about her history as a killer... Or as having had to kill.
Like, right. Because Kira is proud of having been a member of the Resistance, but does not exult in the death that she had to mete out as a result of that.
And this scene presupposes that, like, that Dax is asking in order to get some advice. In the way that, like...
So how bad is it to waste somebody?
It's sort of like, what? How do you ask a girl out on a date? Like it's posed as that sort of question, as an advice giving question. Yeah. Only it certainly doesn't get that far.
Yeah.
The reason that Dax has to ask is that she has caught wind of the reason that these three Klingons are there. Their meeting was orchestrated as a way to gather these troops. Something very bad happened to them a long time ago.
Kang, the third of the three Klingons to arrive, has found the albino. And what we've come to find out is that Curzon Dax was the godfather of Kang's son, and Kang, Kor, and Koloth all were dispatched like as a team, three ships, three captains, to go kill this albino who was like doing raids, and they killed all his men and stuff, but the albino escaped and it promised to kill their firstborn, all three of them, and made good on that promise. And so those three dudes plus Curzon Dax formed a lifetime pact that should an opportunity present itself, they would go revenge themselves upon the albino.
And this is the point where the storyline becomes very familiar to anyone who has seen a Morgan Freeman movie of the last 5 years. Like, this is Klingon bucket list. This is like, let's get the olds together for one last ride.
Yeah, we're going to go find that albino. We're going to put a bunch of meat in between the sheets on his bed.
Yeah.
And that'll be our Rwenge.
What does it mean?
It means omerta.
Yeah. Dax really wants to go with.
Yeah.
And that is a problem for a group of Klingons who still aren't sure necessarily that they want her around. Because while she has made the case that she is what was in Curzon is in her, they're not really feeling the vibe of bringing her along on this mission.
They're described as looking 150 years old, which I didn't think I realized before this episode that Klingons live very long lives compared to contemporary humans.
Maybe it's their organ duplication that doubles their lifespan from a human being.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I guess we don't really know how long humans live in Star Trek.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's ever been...
Yeah, wasn't Dr. McCoy well over 100 in the premiere episode of TNG?
Yeah, but he looked pretty rough.
Yeah, like, he looks so rough you don't want to live that old.
Yeah.
He actually discouraged a lot of people from making it that far.
They're like, we've advanced pretty far, but not far enough.
During that Pulaski season, when Pulaski got infected with the old age virus, she's like, oh God, this is not going to turn me into one of those McCoy-looking guys, is it?
Yeah, so they were expecting to go find, like, an old dude.
Yeah.
And instead they find a young woman. And I think it's more because she kind of defies their expectations of the person they were going to grab to go on this adventure than anything else. They don't want her to feel obligated. Like, Kang specifically says, like, you are released from this oath because you've passed on to a new life. And, like, Dax has a conversation with Kira about how that's actually kind of, like, how it works for Trills. Like,
if not, you wind up paying off old debts forever.
In the Dead Sons Club's defense, Dax does not display an equivalent amount of vengeance emoting here as they do.
She's never put any sausages in somebody's bed.
No. And, like, if she was a little more born to kill in like, carriage, I think it would have gone a long way to convince them earlier. But as it is, she's soberly doing the work of convincing throughout. And that's what makes her job so much harder.
Yeah. So she goes on kind of like apology tour 2018, where she like really works individually on Kor, Koloth, and Kang on like what is going to convince each of you that I'm worthy of this adventure. And Kor, we've established, is kind of the drunk idiot of the group. So obviously that interaction takes place at the bar in Quark's. One thing I noticed about this scene was he just had like a big pile of latinum on the bar. Like, bars of latinum are just like in front of him. And he's not really paying attention to them. But I kind of like that as like Klingon power move. Like, I dare you to come try and swipe one of these. Anybody. I'm desperate for a fight.
Yeah, it does seem that way. Like someone at a casino not guarding their chips.
Yeah.
The next scene is really fun because it's a demonstration of Bikram Batleth.
Yeah, they've turned the holo suite up to 115 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
And Koloth.
Leather is not a breathable fabric.
Koloth is... there's some like pretty fun wide combat shots between Koloth and Dax. Like, it's a little corny, but it's not as corny as it would have been in like season 2 of TNG, you know?
It's tough when you make that your level of success comparison, though.
Yeah. But like when Riker and his dad like fight each other with Q-tips, it is corny as fuck.
This is not Ambo Jiu-Jitsu corny.
No,
for sure.
This is Bikram Batleth corny.
Yeah. And Dax gets an opportunity to prove herself physically here. by replicating herself a Bat'leth and then getting it on.
I like the like tradecraft of like calling for not just like stock Bat'leth, but a Bat'leth with very specific like measurements and weighting and stuff.
A warrior's configuration.
Yeah, like the bowler with the very specific hole placement and weighting and mica paint job.
Yeah, and then somebody finds that in her bag later when they break into her apartment. They say, "What the fuck is this?" And she says, "Obviously, you're not a golfer."
She ends up losing this fight. Or throwing it?
I wondered about that. Like, because she holds her own for a while, but then is disarmed and on the ground with the tip of the blade next to her neck. And that is Koloth's cue to say, "You are worthy of this mission." And I would think that a Klingon would be pretty pissed if they caught you, like, throwing a fight, right?
Isn't it established that Koloth has, like, Kronos-based mesothelioma?
People who have been diagnosed with mesothelioma have many questions.
Like, hasn't he presented as someone with a respiratory illness, or is that one of the others?
I don't know. Did you catch him like taking a drag off his inhaler or something?
No, I mean, one of them is coughing a lot.
Oh, he's got chronothelioma. You or someone you know have inhaled Kronos.
I'm so glad we're in the same room so you could see how enjoyable I found that without hearing me laugh. Kang in the very next scene ends up getting his appeal being done at Quark's bar, right? Like, she has to turn the screws on him.
Yeah. It's got to be weird, like, me sitting in that bar and have people come out of the Holo Suites just sweaty as fuck.
And not knowing why.
Yeah.
Stinks like sex in here.
Morn just comes out wearing a towel around his waist. We haven't seen Morn in a long time.
He's been in the background a little bit.
He's grown difficult to spot for me for some reason.
Huh. Do you think when Morn wears a towel around his waist, he wears one of those Always Sunny dick towels?
Check it out. That dude's naked. No, it just looks like it. He's wearing a hilarious towel.
Dax convinces Kang of her, not only her warrior ability, but re-emphasizes that she is who she says she is.
Yeah.
And then
and that she's as pissed about this as they are as well. Like, she is fired the fuck up about this.
I understand Klingons.
All right, then. It worked.
One thing that has pervaded all of these conversations and interactions is that no one, even after having been convinced, is excited to have her along. Like, Kang begrudgingly agrees to have her along, and I think his outshot is, "Come and be damned."
Like, yeah. Well, it's like that. It's the honor thing, right? It's like, yeah, if we determine that it would be dishonorable not to take her, then we can't go. Yeah. So that's the calculus, but that calculus fucking sucks.
Yeah. I mean, if there's one thing that TNG has taught us, it's that you need a letter from your parents to get excused from Starfleet to go on a Klingon mission.
Yeah.
This is something that Picard had a great amount of reluctance to grant Worf, and Sisko has the same problem with Dax.
Yeah.
Because I mean, Kira Worf has tattled on her.
Yeah. Worf actually did it, though. He went and killed that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know that must not have made the Federation newspaper, because you know Dax would have used that as a reason.
Yeah. Listen, Ben, I have it on good authority that your hated nemesis Captain Picard allowed this kind of thing, and it changed Klingon politics forever.
I'm not Picard.
But she talks him into it, and it's like, it's one of those, like she's, like, in the ninja costume, packing her duffel, ready to head to the bird of prey or whatever.
Like, not to skip to the end or anything, but the shit does not hit Kira for ratting her out here at all.
Yeah, Dax does not appear to hold any grudges about that.
Yeah.
Which, in a Real Housewives universe, anytime something gets back to anybody else, there's fucking hell to pay, you know?
And if this was an episode of Housewives, they would cut to the confidential booth.
Yeah.
And Kira would be like, "She gave me no choice. I had to report her to Sisko."
And then cut to the confessional with Dax, where she goes, I can't believe she reported me to Sisko.
On Kang's ship, they do that thing in the schoolyard where they, like, go over the map of the grounds, yeah, and they, like, they're using computer graphics as the rocks and shells and sticks of the thing.
Right.
But this is a real piece of shit plan from Jump.
Right.
Kang, what are you doing?
They know that there are 40 guards, and they know that the albino is inside this compound. And they, like, they're doing the math, and they're like, well, if there's 40 guards, they must be spaced out quite a bit, because this is a big compound, but they would have to be spaced out so much that they wouldn't be able to see each other. So it just doesn't make any sense. There must be either more guards or better defenses than we've been led to believe. And so Dax is writing for, like, let's slink in the dead of night and stick a knife in this guy's neck. And instead, Kang is like, nope, like, that's not how we're doing this. We're not doing this like cowards. We're going in the front door and fucking kicking a bunch of asses, taking a bunch of names, and either killing the guy or dying trying. And
meeting over.
Yeah, Cord and Co-author like, I like the way you think, Kang. All right.
I'm going to go fuck with some gach. Yeah. I'll see you at our call time.
Yeah. And Dax sticks around, and she's like,
you can't win!
Like, we can stand around and say this is a good day to die all day long, but, like, what's the story? Like, why are you bringing us all to die for sure?
It's suicide!
Like, isn't it more fun to win? Do we even want to win?
Yeah. Like, I don't know if this ever gets resolved, the idea of a Klingon that dies of old age, you know?
Yeah.
These guys are 150, they're Dahar masters, they're noted badasses. But if they don't die in battle, does that just mean that, like, none of that mattered?
Hard to say. They've made their choices, though. Like, they want to die during this mission. This is suicide by guard.
But what if you're such a badass that you just never die in a battle?
I mean, you would think that would be the best outcome.
Except for it's never talked about.
Yeah.
Like, dying of old age horrified Worf.
Yeah.
Like, we heard him talk about that for sure.
Yeah.
But what Kang reveals is that he actually talks to the albino, like, face-to-face. Like, he went to check out the intel that he got before he even put the adventure together. And the albino was like, yeah, like, come at me, bro. Like, let's make this a challenge. I'm going to have 40 guys. You guys see if you can make it through the front door.
It's a weird amount of, like, location scouting and how nonviolent that conversation was.
Yeah. So it's interesting because they've been sort of planning a surprise attack. That's not what it's going to be. The albino is expecting them. He's picked 40 guys that are his toughest guys, and they're waiting for them. Like, they are on alert.
It also becomes clear why none of them wanted Dax to come with them.
Right. Do you think Kor and Koloth know about this?
I kind of do.
Yeah. They just don't care.
If you're in Dead Sons Club, like, I think you share everything.
Yeah. Dead Sons Club is pretty cool that way. So Dax is like us all getting killed is totally stupid and pointless, and we could actually win this if we're just a little bit smarter about it. And one thing we could do is do some, like, scattering fields from orbit that disable all their phasers, and then it's a sword fight, and, like, the four of us can for sure take out 40 guards in a sword fight.
Yeah, Sisko and O'Brien were just on that lube planet.
It's wonderfully soothing.
That had such a scattering field. I think I can use his what he wrote about in his log.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our advantage.
He brought back a piece of machinery that I happened to throw into my suitcase just in case something like this came up. It's going
to
be great.
What I'm proposing is that we use the scattering field to disable their phasers, but also we bring a lot of lube.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
So they get down to this planet, and a lot of sneaking around. We get a reveal on, like, world's dorkiest henchmen.
Really dopey guards.
Yeah.
This really hurt the episode, I think.
Yeah, like, putting a bunch of guys in wetsuits and bad hockey helmets does not make it seem like this is a badass compound that a bunch of, like, super ninjas are gonna have to break their way into?
I would rather have not seen them. I would rather it be like sentry cannons or something. Like
right.
Anything but what we see here would make this situation seem more dangerous.
Yeah.
But that they're all just like a bunch of dumpy white guys with visors.
Yeah, it's just a
why
bunch
are
of,
they human?
Like 45-year-old white guys with dad bods, and they're literally wearing wetsuits.
I think if you're not going to do the work of making the albino terrifying visually,
right,
and not really making him scary by virtue of his backstory, which, I mean, what he did is fucked up, but it's not, his method of killing them is not especially scary in a Star Trek context.
Yeah.
Then you need the guards to be scary or the compound to be scary, but it's the mask playset and the guards are dumb looking and dopey.
Like they needed to get a bunch of Dolph Lundgren looking guys to be the guards.
Yeah.
Or that guy from X-Men with the crazy muscle face.
Yeah.
Like they've got that guy's number on speed dial. Why not get that guy and just shoot him walking around a bunch of times?
This whole scene just felt very safe to me in a way that I wish it didn't.
Yeah. One thing I did like it is the exteriors are really cool. Like they definitely like found an amazing location for this.
Yeah.
And while the insides are obviously the playset from Mashk, the outside is like, I don't know, some kind of Japanese garden or something.
I always love a practical outside playset.
And they smoke it up. Like there's all this like atmospherics stuff like that Star Trek almost never does.
Yeah.
It's not a bad soundstage with the psych 25 feet from the back of everybody's head. It's like a real place. And having those like dopey guards in there is such a completely breaks the spell of what would otherwise be like a pretty awesome assault scene.
They don't pay off the potential of everything else.
But we get to meet this albino and he's just kind of like an old guy. We were kind of debating, is this dude a Klingon or not? And he isn't.
I just want to know more about him. Like, what is he doing here? What are these henchmen obeying him for?
Yeah, like, is he stupendously rich or something? Like,
I feel like the shorthand is like, oh yeah, this is a Scarface situation. Like, this is his mansion, and he's got all this wealth, and he's, like, just killing people that he wants to kill, but that's all headcanon.
Right, and if you're a human in the 24th century and you have an opportunity to live inside the Federation where you never want for anything, why, like, go be in a jungle and pull on a fucking neoprene.
Yeah, this life
henchman
sucks for
suit.
Them.
Yeah.
I could never be a henchman. I am just a normal guy who is between the age of 18 and 30, a loner, and lacks ties to friends and family.
Henchman is the worst job you could possibly have in this context.
You don't
want
to be henching for this guy?
No. You don't want to be henching for anybody. But yeah, they like, you know, they fight through all the guards. They do like a, you know, set off some explosions, cut the power, break in through the front door, and they fight up the steps toward the albino. They kill a bunch of bad guys. Koloth catches one in the belly, which winds up being his doom. You know, and I think Kor gets hurt a little bit too. And eventually it's Kang and the albino fighting up at the top of the steps, and Dax down at the bottom, like finishing off the last of the henchmen. And Kang's batleth breaks, and he, like, gets knocked to the floor, and he's stabbed, and he's, like, he's in rough shape, but Dax gets there just in time to catch the albino before he finishes Kang off. And she's kind of having that moment of, like, am I really gonna do this? Holy fucking shit. And you can almost see, like, Kira's head, like, rotating over her shoulder. Like,
yeah. Like, you know, the Sears Portrait Studio, her superimposed over the top.
Echoey sound effects, like, saying that she regretted killing people or something. And then Dax is about to do the do, and instead Kang sticks the guy through the back and spares Dax the murder. She's definitely killed a bunch of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Leading up to this, but this one seemed to like feel like something to her.
Yeah. Kang ends up dying himself.
It
not
seems
long
like
after. Kor's the lone survivor besides Dax.
Yeah. It seems like the guys that she killed that she didn't have anything against would have been harder to kill than the guy that she was there to specifically enact vengeance on.
That's such a great point. I mean,
like, that guy's just fucking working for a living.
Dax is not clean when she gets back to the station.
No. And, like, the last scene when she's back, like, you know, just, like, trying to get some work done at Ops is, like, Cisco and Kira just looking at her like, what the fuck? like she has totally changed in their eyes.
It's similar to the way that, like, if you work in a corporate environment and just come back from a vacation all tan and relaxed, people also treat you that way.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, we were all
here with that
working.
Shit. Yeah. I had to answer your fucking phone.
Yeah.
No scream to Stovacore.
I noticed that too. They did a little song, but that doesn't warn anybody that a warrior's coming.
No one's going to know in Stovacore that a couple more warriors are coming.
A couple of fucking Dahar masters are coming.
Yeah, what's the meaning of that?
Stovacore's not going to know what hit it.
Yeah, I kind of missed that.
Yeah.
When Dax goes back to her post, getting the stare down from Kira and Sisko, we get the single brass instrument of moral ambiguity. What's going to happen? This is one of my favorite parts of the episode, though, Ben. I like that they didn't tie it up at all, and it's just...
It's a little
bit
like
cold looks.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Data and Saul Rubinek, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, wow, like, we have some shit to chew on right now about what Dax means as a character. Like we knew Dax had, like, a pretty amazing backstory, and Dax has been through some kind of rugged shit in this season especially, but the fact that she had to, like, puzzle through the moral implications of what she felt she must do,
yeah,
and then went and did it,
yeah,
is intense.
It's admirable that she was willing to go that far for her friends.
Yeah.
But it's frowned upon by those in the Federation. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. It's a fun adventure. It kind of feels a little bit like Rambo 2, like all the running around in the jungle and, like, you know, grabbing a guy from behind and breaking his neck.
It's a hell of a combination.
They weren't only supposed to take pictures, though.
Yeah. But it's a fun adventure. It's, like, a bunch of fun characters. It's a little bit of a, you know, vacation from day-to-day Deep Space Nine, but also not without adding some dimensionality to a character that I think has been given some short shrift this season, and
yeah,
this is a great episode for her. How about you?
I don't think it's necessarily fair to allow a costuming choice to ruin what is otherwise a really interesting episode, so I'm not going to let that happen. Like, I thought the guards were a bad choice.
Yeah.
And I thought it took a lot of the intensity out of the episode to have them look that way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I want to be able to look past that. And in so doing, I will also say that it's a fun episode. It's a technically really good episode for a lot of the reasons we stated before. Like, yeah. A lot of the camera moves are great. You get some nice compound fight scenes.
Yeah, the fighting, especially once they get into the MASH playset, is fun as fuck and well staged, and, like, the lighting is really cool. The cinematography is really cool. Like, it seems like a little bit higher spec than a lot of the episodes we've seen recently.
Pretty fun ep. And what would seem to be a very important ep for the Dax story arc.
True.
One of the most important things to the Greatest Gen story arc is the continuing reading of Priority One messages. Ben, you want to see if we have any of those?
Let us do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a commercial nature.
Hey.
The message goes like this. Do you have children and live in Tucson? If so, this message is for you. Check out Da Vinci Tree Academy, a new, free K-6 school that focuses on STEM subjects. All students receive an iPad for their studies and do science and technology projects in addition to their normal curriculum. To learn more, visit DaVinciTree.academy. We promise that our staff is nothing like the two hilarious perverts that host this show. Ben, we know what STEM is. It's science, technology, engineering, and math, correct?
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds really cool. That sounds like a great school, and a school that does know what weirdos we are.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't know if I want to be called a pervert.
Yeah, especially in a talking about a school context.
Yeah. That sounds like a great place to send your kids. I'm sure that you can learn more on that website.
Yeah, if you want your kid to be the Chief O'Brien of the future, definitely check out www.DaVinciTreeAcademy. That's DaVinciTreeAcademy. To learn more.
Yeah. I've always wanted to get into the academy.
I know, and here's your chance.
You think they got a Kobayashi Maru at Da Vinci Tree?
I mean, I would wonder what a K through 6 age Kobayashi Maru might be.
Adam, we got another Priority One message, and it is of a personal nature, and it's from a sad, sad person named Andrew, and it's for Adam and Ben. Adam, then Ben, because Seattle.
I can respect that.
It goes like this. I've paid $100 for many stupid iPhone games like Yahtzee and Simpson Tapped Out. My wife said no more. But she didn't say no to this. P.S. Drunk shim whatever.
Whoa. Yahtzee's $100 for your iPhone? This is news to me.
Yeah, is he saying he spent $100 cumulatively, or did he, like... Did he pay to have Simpsons Tapped Out super points or whatever?
You know, sometimes you download a game and it's like 99 cents, but then when you're in the game, it makes you buy a whole bunch of extra shit.
Yeah.
I wonder if you have to buy the dice in Yahtzee.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got to buy the little cup.
Yeah.
And then you got to buy the little sheet of paper to keep score on.
That cup is available for a low monthly cost of $5.99.
And what is Simpson Tapped Out?
Oh, this is one of these iPhone games that doesn't actually, you don't actually get anywhere. You just like, it's like Farmville or whatever, you know?
Oh.
I was addicted to it for a long time. I can totally relate, but I also...
Oh, jeez.
I feel bad if we're like exploiting this guy's retail addiction or whatever.
I think unlike these iPhone games, we're giving him good value.
Yeah. Exactly. We've talked about these iPhone games for a while now.
Wait, is this an ad for two iPhone games?
Hey!
What the fuck, Andrew?
Turns into
buy
sad,
a commercial
sad guy.
Message.
He's a developer?
Oh, this is... That's great. Andrew just... fucking used us. I tip my hat to you, Andrew. Well
yeah,
played.
If you can get one of those past the goalie at MaximumFun.org, slip a personal in at that is in fact a commercial.
Wow. Three goalies in front of the net too. Me, you, and Daniel. Let it get by us.
Yeah, right through the five hole. It's like the Big Lebowski dream sequence. Anyways, thank you, Andrew, and thanks to Da Vinci Tree Academy for getting a Priority One message. If you'd like to get a Priority One message on the show, you know what to do. You go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, and you can pay $100 for a personal message or $200 for a commercial message. What does that money do, Adam?
It makes the show possible, Ben.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Ben Kaur seems to be the only one who's having any fun here. Like, his first scene is heard but not seen in the destruction of the Hollow Suites. He seems like the one who's most interested in just knocking a couple of heads together and having two ladies on his arm at Quark's and doing all of the fun things about this this violent mission that has been proposed. Everyone else seems a little bit dour or resistant to Dax's involvement. Cord doesn't seem to take a hard line either way. He's just there to like enjoy what remains of his of what he believes to be a short life. And I could really appreciate that about him.
Yeah. I mean, he's lived a long life, but he's really like putting in quality time there at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, what remains, I think he's expecting to be not
delightful.
Long. Yeah.
Delightful but short. I couldn't figure out what this character's name was, but my drunk Shimoto was the, I don't know, lieutenant of the albino. He was kind of a particularly loafy guy who didn't have the hockey helmet that many of the other guards had.
He looked a little bit like a Thing from Fantastic Four. He just looked a little clobbery.
Yeah, he looked a little clobbery, but then like during that fight scene in the Mashk playset, they are, you know, there's three Dahar masters and Dax just like laying waste to what are the last of their 40 best men. And he's just standing like up three steps with the albino behind him. Like, get that guy out of there. Like, if your job is to protect that guy, don't just stand there like you don't know what to do.
He is a Markallian, Ben.
No kidding.
His race of people actually has a backstory and stuff.
No shit.
Markallians have appeared in 34 episodes of DS9.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for them. You like to see the Markallians getting out there, being represented, etc.
Gotta get that gold press latch.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVS. Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water, and I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start, and these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else.
My name's Tom. I studied cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Which episode of DS9 will represent our show next time, Ben?
Well, the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine is Season 2, Episode 20, The Makewees, Part 1.
What?
Makewees?
Sisko uncovers a Federation terrorist group whose actions could start another war with the Cardassians. Wasn't there a two-parter called The Makewees for TNG?
I believe there was.
The Netflix description is, the worst is feared when a Cardassian freighter, the Bachnor, explodes while departing the station. So, another...
Sounds like an exciting start.
Yeah. So, looking forward to that, Adam. Do you want to find out if we will be doing a particular type of ep when we record that one?
I think we better.
We are dangerously proximate to Square 62, which would wormhole us all the way back to Square 18, which is a Quark's Bar episode. We could also potentially hit Square 64, which is a Starship Mine episode, in which we would have to build a model. We would each have to build a model of a spaceship while recording the episode. And,
that could only be the dumbest bit we ever do.
I mean, I think that the thing that people would look forward to is seeing the picture of the terrible starship that we made after we finished recording the ep.
We can auction them off for charity.
Yeah, sure. Not that anybody would want that, but...
The NCSC would be deeply ashamed to receive that contribution.
All right, so Square 61, Adam, do you want to roll a random number for us?
Indeed I will.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll. Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
That I was momentarily very scared because we have narrowly escaped both the wormhole and the Starship Mine squares and have gone to square 65 with a roll of a four.
So, you know, we could still hit a Quark's Bar next time.
Could also catch a wormhole back down to the bottom again where we go through all this stuff, right?
That's 87.
So. Well, no, I mean, like, eventually, like, of the stuff we're passing can come back to bite us.
Yeah, there's still three wormholes ahead of us on the board. I think that what the people really want to hear is a Mournhammered episode.
Yeah.
But I am TBH kind of terrified of that.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the next episode. In the meantime... if you like the program, tell your friends and go to MaximumFun.org/donate and become a monthly supporter and get all of our bonus content in the donor feed. Go listen to our other shows that are also on MaximumFun.org. We've got The Greatest Discovery, which is about Star Trek Discovery, and there's episodes about every episode of the first season, and we're now... doing kind of like news and reading the comics and talking to interesting, people who have written interesting things about Star Trek Discovery and just having a generally great time over there.
In exactly a month, we will have landed in Vegas to spend the first of a couple of days before our show in Las Vegas, around the time of Star Trek Las Vegas, the convention.
Yes, indeed. So go to greatestgencon.com and find your tickets there.
So many other dates on that tour, too, that we've added. Hopefully you're able to find one that is close to you.
Yeah, and we'd love to see you all out there. We should thank Dark Materia for our original theme music and Adam Ragusa, who's made so much... new theme music for us. It's really kind of embarrassing, including a brand new custom theme song that we're using on the Greatest Gen Con tour. That is one of my favorite things.
Yeah, it's really great.
And we should thank everybody that goes on social media and tweets and Facebooks about how much they like the show. If you'd like to talk to other folks, you can use the Greatest Gen hashtag on Twitter or go to the Facebook group or the subreddit. You know, like, we are able to do this because the show found an audience, and the more you guys put the word out, the better we can make the show, because the more focus we can put on it. So that really helps, and all those social media communities are really great, thoughtful, fun, and interesting people. So I encourage you to get involved.
Find a friend there, yeah. Or a lover, even. That happens.
That does happen.
With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that has formed a splinter group for whom Ben has given some sort of weird French name, because he would be the one that splits off and forms a splinter group with a French name. What would you name your splinter group, Ben?
I'd probably just go La Résistance.
Of course. La pâtisserie.
Le boulangerie.
Le bouff.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.